Welcome to Natural Recovery from Suffering. This is Scott Killaby. And this is my last episode. And I'll tell you about that in a second. But there is a lot of content now on podcast. I'm going to circulate that content. Because I think I've said for now everything that I want to say. But that doesn't mean I'm going to be gone for long. No, because podcast is my favorite medium now. Because, well, what is it? Oh, that and shorts. I like videos, shorts. Shorts are fun because I can condense something down into a minute or less. Something that can be fairly complex. And that's like fun for me, just as an exercise or a game. But it's also, I think, a really powerful medium, a one-minute short. And I don't really do long videos anymore. So podcasts, this is the place where, I don't know, there's more explanation around what we're doing here with KI and this work. So if you listen to the podcast, you get the most depthful context, perhaps, at least of my content that's out there around this work. So I'll be back. But I'm taking a break because it's just energetic. You'll see, like maybe you already do. As you do the deeper repression work, you trust yourself. Yes. And so my body's just saying, okay, that's it for now. You've said everything for now. Come back whenever. And it's not something that I know in my mind. It's just something. I mean, for example, I put a podcast out every week from December of 2023 to what, a week ago? And without effort. Actually, I recorded more podcasts than that, but I didn't put them out. The ones that I put out, though, I mean, everything came out just as flow. That's what my life is now. It's just flow. I could just do, it's endless energy is what it is. But even though it's endless energy, if there's something that you trust in it when you do this work, you really trust it. And the mind no longer runs things. So I can't tell you that I have thoughts as to why I'm not going to do a podcast for a while. Because I don't have any. I just know. You just know. When you do deep somatic work, you know. And you trust that. And that's an intelligence that is not thoughts. And I never could know that deeper. It's beyond intuition. Intuition, I know what they mean. This is a knowing of what you are and what you want and how you want to move and what you don't want. It's just such a beautiful thing. And no wonder the mind has to be so busy when we're not embodied, because it's trying to overcompensate for repression, for example. You know, it's just trying to keep us safe. So when the mind is in service of just keeping us safe and getting us love, it's just not our friend. But as we do the repression work, we trust what we are. It's not something that you can even point to. I mean, people say, oh, you mean trusting your body? Yes, but like the mind and body are connected. So I know what they mean, though. They mean you're not in your head like most humans or like you were. Correct. That's another way of saying it. But it's not like now I'm down in my body. I'm like right over here, you know, the center of my chest, slightly to the right now. No, it's just knowing what you are, being what you are. And the thing is, the mind isn't supposed to know what that is. We had it wrong. The mind that dreamed up a separate self was just fixated out of fear of being what you really are. When you're being what you really are, you don't need your mind for that. The mind, not for identity. The mind is used for functional reasons or to express, but you know when you know. You know when it's time to end something, and you know when it's time to begin something. Or when to take a break, or when to say something to someone or not. Because you know that your suffering came from not knowing that and not trusting yourself before. So that's why I'm taking a break. All of that to say that. But I have this Carpenter song in my head now. We've only just begun. You and me here, whoever's listening, whomever is listening, you and I, if you'll stay with me, I have some things that I want to share with you. I've only started. And during the time that I'm gone, I'm going to bring guests on here too. But during the time that I'm gone, if you're listening to me right now, I'm inviting you to go back and listen to, well, let me give you a list of what I think are the best podcasts if you just want to understand this work and what it really is. Not how to do it. Those are the skills that you learn in different ways, mentorship and sessions. Go to killaby.com for that. But this is just before you do that to understand what we're doing. The podcast is a great place to come and understand KI. Our tagline is natural recovery from suffering. That's the name of the podcast. This is why I'm doing it. I mean, this is my favorite subject. And I want to bring Dan, my co-developer, on here soon too. Or when I come back. So I really feel good about this. You guys, I want to share this on a personal note for a second before I go into that. I am doing better than I have ever done in my life. And I didn't know that it was humanly possible to be doing this well. Honestly. And it's all energetic. And it's why I got involved in awakening or sought it out, because I knew it in my system. But until it was embodied, the suffering was still there. And I'm just doing really well and enjoying myself and being myself. Yes, definitely being myself in ways that you can't even see. Like, there are certain habits that I have that I don't even care about changing. Because there's no suffering in them. And when I looked at them, what I was trying to do, I was trying to change them because it still had to do with mom and dad. You know? And when you realize, oh shit, that's connected to mom and dad, and then you process the anger, fucking anger and hurt towards mom and dad and the shame. I mean, we're talking about deep repression work. Then that changes. And that's what's been so beautiful. Because what is an ideal person? I mean, what are we supposed to be? Does anybody know what we're supposed to be? You know, the reason I bring this up is because when I first got to the path, I had anger repression. So I shadowed out that anger repression. I thought that when you awaken, you're just going to be, well, let me see if I can call myself out here. Here's what I think I thought back then. When I first started the non-dual path, I thought that if you become enlightened, you would be really, really peaceful. Like, it's exactly like what someone called me before this repression work when I was still in anger repression. And I had had the non-dual shift without the embodiment. And I had just that repression there. And someone said, you're like a walking Xanax or a living Xanax. And I remember, like, there was a little bit of ego pride there, but it was so quiet in the peacefulness that it was like, oh, well, who cares if there's a little bit of ego? I mean, it was so quiet, but it just looked like this little feeling like, oh, well, thank you for saying that. Because that was my projection when I first started, that I wanted to be that. And then there was someone saying, well, that's how I feel when I'm with you. And I'm like, oh, well, thank you, said my repression. Said my buried anger. Thank you so much for acknowledging me that I'm running Scott's life. Well, the objective for me is not to be a living Xanax. But there is the piece that passes all understanding that we can't throw out. Because that's still has to be included because that's a part of it. But that's been updated or upgraded for me from just the piece that passes all understanding, that now it has to pass the goddamn repression test. If it doesn't pass the repression test, it's not the piece that passes all understanding. I love that I can curse, because I think I became a non-dual teacher so I couldn't be myself, I think. Pretty sure. Yeah, the piece that passes all understanding has to pass the repression test. If you don't know what I mean, go to repressiontest.com and you'll take that test to start this work. Or go to killaby.com and scroll to the bottom of the page. But the piece that passes all understanding by passing the repression test, that just means, look, until I can be at peace with anger, I'm not at peace. Until I can be at peace with fear, I'm not at peace. And you're not either. But anger repressors and hurt repressors who are being driven by fear would love to think that they're experiencing the peace that passes all understanding. And I understand that bypass better now, because you don't have to embody awareness to notice that awareness is divisionless. That your basic awakeness is not a thought. It's divisionless awareness. So there's a non-dual to that, but it's just not embodied. It's not lived. And it can't be at that stage, where we just say, well, there's this, you know, divisionless awareness only, and it's not embodied. So the peace that passes all understanding, what does it mean to be at peace with my anger or my hurt or my fear? To have processed that buried stuff. Because by the mere fact of bearing that was the non-peace, that was the resistance to those emotions. So by doing the repression work, that's what I mean by being at peace with that, which is just, that's the embodiment process. Okay, so that, I didn't want to get into all that. I wanted to do this last episode, well, to talk about the work, of course. I'm just like doing so well that I just, even though it's the right time to take a break for a bit, I'm also really excited to just talk to you guys. Because I know that there's some people listening, and I watched the numbers go up recently. So I'm on like 15 or more platforms, and there's quite a few listening across the platforms. I mean, for my work, people are interested in this subject for sure. It's growing, still quite small compared to where it might be given the nature of this subject when people hear about it more. That it's, in my view, very supported by science. I mean, gosh, I spent years in my treatment centers. I'll tell you this before I go to the next segment. When I opened treatment centers, mental health centers in California, I would go home every night after working with people at the centers during the day, and I would just research this subject, not only that whole field, but and then, of course, I became an addiction specialist for a bit, but then I dropped that credential. But my point is this. I've come a long way in working with people. And I've actually evolved myself. The whole teaching, the work has changed. And I'm surprised that anybody listens. That's what I want to say. That I'm very appreciative and grateful that whether you're someone who listened to me years ago, because I've been teaching for 16 years, or if you just started like last month, I'm very grateful. I'm also very grateful for the people that somehow came along with me, though, or are going to come back to this work now or to this work, because I'm very aware of how the work has changed and evolved, and I know that that's like a moving target. I want to explain that in the next episode, why this work evolves or how. And why I think that's actually really important. Yeah, stay tuned. If you're a teacher who only points to presence, that work or that teaching won't evolve a lot because of the nature of that teaching. So my teaching didn't evolve in that regard in first dimension. That's what I call first dimension teaching or practice, where nothing is being prompted up and there's no inquiry. We're just being with what is. Whatever arises, notice it. Let it be. Or just be here now. We're not doing inquiry, that kind of practice or teaching. And it didn't evolve for years. It didn't need to, because I, in my view, I'd written a total of 7 books. Think about that for a second. A book a year for 7 years on that dimension. Essentially, all of those 7 books were in first dimension. So first dimension teaching, which is just like so many non-dual teachings. I think the vast majority, probably, of non-dual teachings today are, I don't know if I want to say first dimension, because I don't know how many of them include second dimension inquiry. If they include second dimension inquiry, obviously they're not first dimension. First dimension is just being with what is, meditation, mindfulness, sitting and being. Where you're not prompting anything up into awareness that wouldn't otherwise arise. These are dimensions of practice and awareness-based practices. Dimension 2 is where all of that is included, first dimension. In other words, just being with what is, but would prompt things up for whatever reason. There's a whole body of teachings and practices out there that are second dimension. The second dimension practices and teaching that I did were the living inquiries, you know, the unfindable inquiry, compulsion inquiry, those things that were happening back in 2010 to 2014, 15. Those inquiries, which were second dimension, are infused into my 7 books. So like the first few books are just first dimension, and then the last books have those second dimension inquiries in them. I don't recommend those second dimension inquiries. If you can do third dimension inquiry, because if you're able to do third dimension inquiry, you can get to the root of suffering. You can't get to the root of suffering very well with first or second dimension practice or teachings. And that's the great non-dual bypass, actually, or the great Eastern practice bypass. And so many people don't understand it. How could they? The repression that drives it is unconscious. We got a clue about it, though, like in the non-dual teachings, because you would hear it like around in like 2000. I used to hear it a lot in like 2011, 12, 13, just around, that people would say, well, if you don't do shadow work, you can't really embody awareness. And because I didn't understand the link between emotional repression and shadows, I still had emotional repression. I agreed with that, but it was incomplete because that's still doesn't get to the repression. But we were on the right track. That's the thing. Is anybody who does shadow work is really on the right track. But you can really bypass with that too. If you don't take it into the body, to the emotional repression that creates shadows. There's the bypass, another way of explaining it. Because emotional repression creates the sense of division and separation. It creates the deficiency stories, identities. It's safer to be not good enough than it is to feel and express anger to my loved ones or hurt or sadness, whatever my repression is. So repression creates identity, the separation there. It creates shadows. So in other words, if I hold back anger, I might have an issue with authority. So anybody who is an authority might be kind of a trigger, or I might be drawn to them as a positive shadow because I have emotional repression, because I can't be the authority for my own emotional experience. I can't allow anger. I don't know that's why I'm drawn to authority or triggered by authority. And that's one of the qualities of having shadows, is that you're safe from even knowing that you have buried emotions. And by focusing on the other person, you're doubly safe. And that's what our consciousness is doing, is keeping us safe by creating suffering. And once you really understand that contextually, like that becomes your framework for spiritual practice, then you're on the right track. Here in KI, then we take you right to the root of suffering, the repression that drives it all. It's trauma. For any of you guys who are listening, you're like, is he talking about trauma? Yes, I'm talking about trauma. But that's a term that I don't use as much because it doesn't point to what we're doing, really. The word emotional repression points to what we're doing. We're making conscious the mind-body connection that buries emotion and that creates our suffering at the conscious level. So to call it trauma, it's almost like it's not as clear a pointer. You can't point to repression. There's no way to point to it. It's like dark matter. Whether dark matter is real or not, it's a good metaphor here to say that's how repression is. We've repressed these emotions. Of course we don't feel them. They're missing. That's why we keep suffering, because what's missing is driving it. Isn't that crazy? What is missing, what we don't feel, what we have buried, is driving the suffering that we do experience, that we do feel. So one of the classic bypassing scenarios that I've found is this. A person who feels sad or hurt a lot in spirituality, it's a common archetype. Let me build a little profile. I don't like to pigeonhole people, but you might know somebody like this, or you might have some of these qualities. Someone who comes to spirituality because they're hurting, they're in pain, they're sad. When they get triggered, they feel hurt. They might lean towards wanting more vulnerable relationships. But the key is that they don't know that they're anger repressors. Because what's missing is driving what they're experiencing. So when they come to spirituality, it's often because they're feeling that sadness or that hurt. And that's what's visible that they're conscious to. And so why wouldn't they come to spirituality to deal with the suffering? That's the suffering. You know, that's me in a way, not totally, but when I would be triggered back with anger repression, I wouldn't be angry. That's what I wouldn't be. That's what was missing. And so what I might feel was hurt or something else that was safer. And so I came to spirituality wanting to deal with that, including the identity, the deficiency story that would come up. I'm unlovable. You know, like, I'm not good enough. Also safer than feeling and expressing anger. And that's why it was coming up. I didn't know any of that then. I was unconscious to the root of suffering, like so many teachers even, and just pointing to the visible suffering coming and going and saying, that's not you. See how there's an awareness to which all that comes and goes? The visible thoughts, the visible feelings, the things that you're experiencing, they come and go to, quote unquote, no one. It's true, but they're being generated from an unconscious repression that's like dark matter in our bodies. And it's actually felt as the sense of contraction or separation, deficiency and lack. It's almost physical, actually. That's where we need to focus. There's the core of separation, the body. And so naturally, on a spiritual path, that's the last place we want to go. Because that's where we don't want to feel stuff. And many of us came to the spiritual path so we wouldn't have to feel that buried stuff. We just didn't know that. Because again, the missing emotions are driving the suffering, they're driving the seeking to end the suffering. And so many people don't know that. Or if they know it, they don't know what to do with it. All right, stay tuned. More coming. I went around to some of the people that I'm mentoring and I said, now that you've done the work, what would you have me say to people who haven't started it? And some interesting answers came. And so I'm going to talk about those things. And the first one is, why people might be drawn to presence practices versus repression inquiry. It's almost a flippant question or suggestion. And there was laughter around that one because the person went through that whole process. You know, the people are going through, this all happens behind a wall, basically. People are going through a deeply transformative process because we're getting to the root of suffering. People have said to me in the mentorship program, for example, that their consciousness that they have right now is different than the consciousness they had 3 months ago, or even sometimes 2 months ago or a month. They'll describe it in different ways. And I completely concur. It's been my experience. So is it? It's always the same awakeness? Yes, but life is fluid and realization is energetic. And the deeper that you clear, or I should say that as you clear the, no, I should say make conscious the programming that creates the suffering, make conscious. And that energy in the body transmutes. It's a different experience. Even though it's the same awareness, because of the embodiment process, it's the energetic aspect is what makes it fluid and ever-changing and deepening. And you can bypass that and stall and prolong that. And that really is the process of embodiment. It's just one attempt to resist after another. And then seeing that. But what we've done with KI is we've cleaned up the embodiment process, because I've known people, I've heard stories before I was a teacher, and I've worked with people who had long dark night of the soul processes, or who the whole awakening process was really clunky, the embodiment process, because they couldn't get to the root of suffering. And frankly, when I look back at my life, I don't even know why I'm talking about anybody else, because if you look at my life as a teacher, guys, I think my life itself is the best teaching here, if you just step back and look at it. And I've talked about it now, but I was living it, which is this. Came out as a teacher, again, wrote a book each year for 7 years. Here I am teaching and pointing to non-duality. And for 3 years after the initial shift, I'm in like just clarity, peace, non-separation, all that. But it hadn't been embodied. And did I know that cancer was coming, and then spinal stenosis? And then, by the way, a BDSM addiction. All of which classically is driven by emotional repression in the science. It drives addiction. It's behind cancer. Gabor Mate has been saying that. And certainly behind chronic pain. Thank you, Dr. John Sarno, and the recent science in the last 15 years that's nailed that. So I'm a living example of the spiritual bypass. And I'm a teacher. And so I was pointing to awareness, but what I needed to be pointing to was what I was living, which was the bypass, and that's now why I'm pointing to it. That when we come to spirituality, we are already in the bypass. And the question is, when will we wake up to it? That's how I want to talk about it. You're already in it. If you're a human, then you have emotional repression and trauma. You're unconscious to it. It's driving you. Until you make it conscious, it will continue to drive you, including on your spiritual path, or even if you become a finder, because this conditioning is unconscious. So it lives in the bodies of finders who have realized what they are. But because they're unconscious to this programming, they don't know that it's still running them. So when they get the disease or the chronic pain or the scandal happens, or even if it's not a teacher, if it's you and suffering continues, then you might not know why. And you might just say, let it all be, right? You're the awareness to which it all happens. But how long does that have to go on? And I've watched that go on a long time. And people didn't have the skill to get to the root of all of that. And the process of embodiment then can be very clunky and can last longer than it needs to. And my life was a living example of that. So now we reverse engineered it, turned it inside out, and said, if you come here, what we're going to do is we're going to get to the root of suffering first, because that's what's driving the suffering. And we're going to make that conscious. And along the way, you're going to have to recognize the awareness, because you can't hold this. You know, that's what I was saying to that my the people that I'm training. It was a group this morning, and we met so that I could catch them up on mentorship, how to mentor people with repression work. And that came up this morning. There's so much you can't know about this work until you start. And that's what another mentee asked me to talk about. There's so much you can't know. And in terms of the first mentee who wanted me to talk about, the bypass, we don't realize we're in it. And we're always in it as soon as we get here. But there are other things we don't know. It's not just the bypass. It's like the bypass is just what we're doing in spirituality. But then when we find out what's going on in life and relationship, it's a complete game changer. When you do this work, that was a shock to me, actually, because I could see how this corrects the bypass because it gets to the repression. I could certainly see how it took my chronic pain away. But I didn't understand how it gave me my power and my, not my as in separation, It embodiment of the qualities that I couldn't have, that are qualities of presence that I couldn't own because they were too scary or too beautiful. And so I repressed them. Just like so many people do. And had I known from the beginning that the bearing of those emotions is what created the identities and the shadows and the suffering, I would have gotten to that from the beginning, but I didn't know. And so I was in a bypass just like everybody else. But my relationships, well, that's a whole nother thing. My life, I mean, if spirituality doesn't touch into every relationship and into your life and your whatever career you have or whatever, then it's not authentic. It's not mature. It's just an escape, probably, in some way. You're just finding some states, maybe, that are nice on the side, right? Somebody said the other day, sometimes you can sound kind of harsh and judgmental. Well, or either that, or I'm just being myself. In spirituality, people can't do that. That's another way of thinking of it. I'm serious, because there's a lot of anger repressors in spirituality that if you actually share even strong opinions or thoughts, you've done the devil's work. You're doing the devil's work. You're the devil. Because, okay, this is another... I'm sorry, I got this list of things here, which brings me to this point here, another mentee brought up, which is, it was again part of the bypass question. They said, why do you think you got into spirituality, Scott? And I sat with it for a couple of days. We were talking about the subject of this podcast. And they flipped the question on me. They had a question that they were going to give me their answer of the subject to talk about, but they wanted me to answer that first. Why did you get into spirituality? It's a brilliant question. This is somebody I'm mentoring. This is just wise beyond their years too. It's an amazing experience to mentor this person. So I sat with it because I felt like, well, if you're going to ask me such an esoteric and kind of vague question, I'm going to actually sit with it because you weren't very specific, and I'm going to honor it because of that, because it must mean something to you to keep it that vague. That's how I saw it, because it felt pretty vague to me. Why did I get into spirituality? I mean, I was suffering. Isn't that why you were? Oh, yeah, that's why I was. But I sat with it longer. And when I really look at it, it's because I didn't know any better. The right spirituality will take you right back to your life to show you how you're running away from it. And it will be integrated fully in and embodied into your life and relationships, as I've said. So I was running away from life like so many people do, and away from my own body, from the anger that I buried, and the anger repression was driving the seeking to get away from all the pain in relationship and life. And I was coming over to this thing called spirituality, which is this construct. That's how I see it now. Although it's a beautiful one. Truly. Thank God for that, those constructs. That's all to me that spirituality is like this pointer to say, you're running from your life, and I'm going to create this concept of spirituality so you can figure out why you're running from your life and then eventually get back to it, because this is just a pointer here. Spirit, this word spirituality or awareness is just a pointer here, non-duality, because if it doesn't bring us back to our life, our experience, our bodies, our relationship, if it doesn't bring the end of suffering and real transformation, why the hell are we doing it? Oh, that's what I was going to say. One of my mentees said, or somebody said, you can be kind of harsh. I wanted to answer that real quick before I get to why I got into spirituality. Because I think I brought that up. I have so many things I want to talk about. Sorry, guys. But I can be harsh sometimes. Yeah, I explained a little bit maybe, but, or I have before when people have said that or different words. I think that what you're hearing is when you hear in my voice the harshness, it's, I don't mind triggering you, but I'm not trying to, first of all. So I don't mind if that happens. In other words, you know how you go about life, but you want to make sure you don't. I don't really have that. So you can imagine that filter's not there. But more than that, I think it's because I wish somebody would have talked to me that way when I first got to spirituality, because I think this is connected again to why I got into spirituality. It's weird how this came up. They came up together. Because I got into spirituality because I was running from anger. So I was attracted to the teacher who was the living Xanax, or the very peaceful teacher who represented the possibility that I might never have to get angry ever again at some point, or feel reactivity, experience reactivity. Because the anger repression was driving me into spirituality, which would become a construct to take me away from my life and wake up, quote unquote, which is a great and noble endeavor and should happen. I mean, that's a good thing. But it's funny how we create this thing called spirituality when really the waking up needs to happen in our lives. I mean, it's difficult, obviously, because we're so unconscious, but I want to hope to get back to that subject. That's why I think it has to happen in our lives, because that's where it goes back to. So the question is, why do we create something called spirituality that's separate from our lives? So the reason I got into spirituality is because I didn't like my fucking life. That's why. I don't think I liked being, I think I was willing to give it all up. When someone said what awakening was, I was like, well, I don't think there's anything that I value so much. And I was wrong about that, by the way. I valued holding on to anger and other things. I value those things more, at least at the unconscious level, than anything else. But it seemed like at the conscious level, and this is the bamboozle right here, this is part of it, where we tell ourselves things. Like, oh, I want to wake up. But at the unconscious level, it's like, I just don't want to feel anger. And I can't get angry. I can't be myself. So if I wake up, then maybe I'll find out what I am. But it's a bypass. Because how do I find out what I am if I can't open to a basic emotion here that I've buried, which is producing the false identities? Oh, shit. When you see all this, I don't know if you can hear that. But that's why I say go to the repression from the beginning. And that's why I sometimes speak harshly or directly, because I wish somebody would have said that to me. But the real reason, I guess, I got into spirituality now that I've done my work, or not the real reason, but because I didn't want, because I was run by anger repression, I didn't like being triggered, just like you. So that's one reason. And spirituality offered a way to allow the reactivity. Okay, I'm about to lull you in. Get ready. See, in your life, you can just allow all reactivity. Whatever arises, whether it be thoughts, feelings, sensations, you just allow all that. Even if it's a very strong reactivity, just let that be. Or if it's a whatever it is, the ego, as we say. Just be and let everything be. Now see how I can't keep doing that, because that's the lulling in of the meditative voice, of which is actually very helpful when we're just sitting and being in like first dimension. As I mentioned, first dimension pointing, just being. It's also very regulating to the nervous system to just point to allowing everything to be and being. And that's helpful to trauma. It keeps us safe. It is not helpful to us with regard to ending suffering. It is unhelpful. It is momentarily safe, comfortable, expansive, settled. The root of suffering hasn't been dealt with in that kind of pointing, usually. So I lulled you in there to say this. One of the reasons that I got into spirituality is to deal with reactivity and triggers, or from triggers. In first dimension, I would just allow reactivity, like you. Whether you call it first dimension or not, it's first dimension is that ego thing that comes up, the thoughts, feelings, sensations, just letting those be. Noticing, observing, not questioning them with any inquiry, just noticing, observing, allowing, seeing that it all comes and goes to awareness. What my 7 books were written about, all in avoidance of buried anger, or at least unconscious too, because now I understand and I can answer this question from a different angle. Why did I get into spirituality? When I was a little kid, I couldn't defend myself. That's, it doesn't get any more honest than that. I mean, I guess I could, I've told you guys everything. Pretty much. I could never defend, well, no, that wasn't even true. I couldn't defend myself up until age 40, probably age 49. I'm 54. I really couldn't defend myself. And here's how that happened. When I was a kid, I buried anger. So defending myself was absolutely off limits if it included feeling and expressing anger, unless I held it back long enough and then it just came out explosively in like self-defense or reactivity. But my reactivity wasn't anger, obviously, because I buried it. My reactivity would be a trigger. And that's what I want to say to people. Your triggers, your instant reactivity actually comes from holding your emotions back, comes from repression. Because you can't be yourself. you haven't embodied what you really are in your emotions. So when you walk around in life and people say things, we have to react in that way if we don't know what we are, because we can't say, no, that's not true. Or I'm angry about that. Don't talk to me that way. Or that hurts. Why do you say that? Or I'm afraid of you now. I just want to see, just emotionally honest. If we can't do that in full, we have to identify with something false. If we're holding back what's true, we're forced to identify with something false. That's my definition of how repression creates the very ego reactivity that we often come to spirituality to deal with. That's why I came. And not just the reactivity, but the ego itself. Don't we all come to awakening because of that, even if we don't really call it that? But see, as a kid who could never defend himself, when I got to spirituality, I didn't understand that there's a lot of anger repressors who had come before me and who had created teachings and pointers and practices in first and second dimension, which would never get to the anger repression. So it's like being welcomed into a big cushion of safety. Spirituality, this construct, became more than a construct or even a way to run away from my life, but to point me to a way of not really having to deal with that buried stuff. Or, in some cases, then just processing the reactivity on the surface. The stuff that was conscious. And there's the bypass, is looking at this ego identity and seeing that that's not me or you in awareness, while the repression that's completely buried is running all of that. But there's no processing at that level where the repression is. There's the bypass. So, but see, that's a cushion. That's what an anger repressor wants. Until the brick gets pulled up, you know, when you pull the brick up on yourself. So there's my last segment, is pulling the brick up on yourself, because that, of all the things I want to talk about, that seems the most important. And I'm going to point back to some of the previous episodes to watch and some other things. Stay tuned. So picking up the brick on yourself is what I meant, which is just making the unconscious conscious. Just imagine picking up a brick, and under that is emotional repression. And everything that you saw before picking up the brick was just safer than what you had buried under the brick. So you spent your whole life in this sort of fantasy land of safety, of staying safe and getting love. And everything that you do at that level is for safety. You don't know it, because the repression, which is hidden, is driving all that, as we said. So, you know, when I was a kid, buried anger, repression, couldn't defend myself. When the ego reactivity would come up later in my life, I didn't want to feel the buried anger. That wasn't safe. So I just slid right into spirituality to process the ego reactivity at the surface. Didn't have to get to the buried anger. Therefore, the repression of anger was running my suffering before I got here, and it ran my spiritual path after I got here. And that's the bypass. Just another way of saying it. Sometimes if I say it in different ways, it clicks with different people. They'll say, oh, okay, I understand it that way. But for people who repress hurt or sadness, their bypass would look similar. The structure would be the same, but the content would be different. In other words, they have repression running things. I fall in love with many of you. You're my shadow. Hurt, sadness, repressors. So if you are not falling in love with many of you, but I'm with one now, you bury those more quote-unquote vulnerable emotions. And so maybe if you're like the one that I'm with, you might experience anger as safer than, you might not think of it that way, than what you've buried. But so same structure as an anger repressor. You have repression of hurt and or sadness, and then anger comes to the surface when you are reactive. But anger repressors wouldn't necessarily feel anger, or certainly wouldn't express it. It wouldn't really come to the surface. It would be a contraction for us. And for you hurt or sadness repressors, the hurt or sadness would be the contraction in your belly or your heart or your throat. That's what people don't understand. We're dealing just with the contraction here. The self-contraction, which is behind the sense of separation and deficiency, because it's emotional deficiency. We've buried emotions. We're deficient. We're missing them. This is just different ways to look at picking up the brick. Because once you start to make the unconscious conscious, then that's when you have the deep insight into what you've been doing your whole life. It's just interesting where people pick the brick up on the spiritual path is what I look at now. Because the people, I meet people who are just new on the path and just innocently like following the teachers that are like giddy and joyful and don't tell you about the cancer that killed three teachers before that. Or, you know, like they're just still in that stage where it's that honeymoon stage with non-duality. Where, you know, how it is. And, you know, they're not going to necessarily going to want to hear about the root of suffering because they want to skip over that because the repression is driving them still very, very unconsciously. They're in that bypass. But then, you know, later on, if you hang around for a while and the suffering continues, people start to become more open to what we're saying here. Unfortunately, some of us have to get diseases and chronic pain, and some even have to die because of this. This is a really important topic, actually. But until you start picking the brick up on yourself, you will experience suffering, as I've said before, in different ways. You just have to notice it. So another aspect of this is just hearing that. Like when you were a kid, well, I want to go back to anger repressors real quick because I hope you heard that. The ego reactivity is not your problem. You don't have a problem. You have repression driving that ego activity, reactivity at the surface to keep you safe from what you've buried. Hurt and sadness repressors, if you can experience anger or whatever you experience at the surface, that's safer than what you've buried. That's why you're experiencing it at the conscious level. And we all experience, no matter what repression, and some people repress all emotions. But no matter what we repress, we all experience ego identity in this way, as I've said. I'm not good enough, I'm unlovable, or something that is just, again, safer than feeling and expressing anger or hurt to our loved ones. Just listen to that. If you know that, you hear it in your mind, then you know why you have such stories or identities, because it's safer then. It doesn't make sense in your mind, but you can hear it and start to like, oh, okay, I don't really get it, but he's making a lot of sense. See, just think about it for a moment. When you were a kid, if you could feel and express anger and hurt and sadness, would you have had to like identify with anything other than just being yourself? Like, why would you have had to have gone to I'm not good enough or I'm unlovable? But see, because it's safer. You went there. Your ego developed into that because you had to survive. Your family, your parents, school. For you to feel and express everything felt too scary, whether you were conscious of that or not. So you identify with what's false, because if we hold back what's true, we're forced to identify with what's false for the rest of our lives until we start picking up the brick. So here's part of the bypass, as I've said, is you can sit there and question identity and all this stuff, but then you can miss the fact that you haven't picked up the brick yet. Because the brick is the repression barrier. It's when you begin spiritual practice that gets to the root of suffering, according to science, in your own body. So where do people enter that on the path? Well, that ties to the next subject, which is the awareness piece, because someone asked me, who was new, again, to the non-dual message, they were drawn to this message because they heard me talking about repression and how identity comes from that. But where does the awareness recognition play into inquiry on the root of suffering? This person, he asked me that. It's a good question. And why haven't I pointed to presence in 7 years? Much at all. Well, I guess this is the moment I have to answer that. Well, let me see. My whole life was one big avoidance of picking up the brick of my own unconscious. And pointing to presence was part of that unconsciousness. The pointing to presence in the 7 books happened before I picked the brick up. The only modality or pointing or work that I've put into the world was when I put me and Dan together, put KI into the world. That's the first modality in which I had ever picked up the brick, which is the repression work. You know, that's what I mean by trauma work, picking up the brick. You might do it through some other way, but it gets to that level where you're making the really unconscious conscious. Deep stuff, Freudian, Jungian stuff, you know, like the way what they talked about, incorporating and integrating that into the awareness process, because there's the root of suffering in the unconscious, as science now says. So Freud and Jung were way ahead of their game, way ahead of us all on that one. So when you put together, though, the traditions that have pointed to presence and have talked about present moment awareness and no self and awakening and non-dual realization, and then you put together the insights of the West around trauma and shadows and emotional repression, you have, if we will stop arguing and stop picking sides, you have the answer. You have the key. You see, that's why people ask me, why are you so interested in telling people about this? Because you have the key. Whether you know it or not, that's another question, but you have it. It's right before you. And it is the awareness piece, so to speak, and inquiry that gets to the root of suffering. After all these years and centuries of listening and learning from these great traditions and these researchers here in the West, I feel like if you understood how rich all that is, of all my criticism of non-dual teachings and teachers, because I had to pick up the brick, that's a rich part of this work. This is very much a non-dual path of inquiry to me. And don't argue with the word path. I mean, you can. But what I say with this work is that when you have energy on a word, there's your repression. The word is scaring you. That's why you have energy on it. You have to find out why. Because words are not a problem. They're all empty when you get to the root of suffering. But if you don't get to it, then you'll think certain words are off limits. You know what I mean by that, right? I mean that. That's this path, because I wanted to explain it. It's a non-dual path of inquiry. It's an embodiment path. So the way that we look at it is that, you know, we create our own suffering from the unconscious body. There's no independent, separate world out there. We're just dreaming it up. There's our shadows, our identities, our defense mechanisms, our shutdown, our freeze, our political activism, our politics, and everything. That is our trauma. There's no world out there that we could agree on or see. Well, we can agree on something, some things, consensus reality, but there's no, we're dreaming it up just like the non-dual traditions say. And that's why it has to, the non-dual traditions, in my view, have to be made a part of the healing in the West. So all my criticism of non-duality is out the window right now. My criticism is towards the West, to the extent that they're taking too long to bring in the insights of the non-dual traditions and still treating people that in therapy as if that's what we are, and not getting to where these stories come from and the sense of separation comes from, which is where the suffering comes from. Big criticism of the Western model, to the extent it hasn't become somatic-based and awareness-based, because that gets to the answer of what we are. When you talk about healing arts, you'd better get to the question of what we are. There's not going to be any healing there. How are you going to do that when you don't know what you are? How are you going to heal? That's what I say to the West. And then what I say to the East is, how are you going to embody awakening without doing what they're doing in the West? How are you going to do that? You're pointing to presence, but you're not talking about the unconscious much in the East. And here's where people will come up and say, my teacher does. And then I'll say, send your teacher stuff. And I'll say, no, they don't. Or they do. But don't be just reactive. Or you can be reactive, be whatever you want. But whatever happens, happens. But listen, if you can. Because this is going to be a good thing to hear, is that when you really see those of us who are interested in non-duality, because I have deep love for the whole traditions, all of them. I've had a taste of many of them. But we need to be very self-reflective within those traditions too, and understand that there's a limitation in a lot of those practices and pointers, which I hope I've illuminated on this episode and others. But all of that to say, the good news is we have everything we need now. If we'll stop thinking that it's one or the other and it's both, that the non-dual traditions and, I mean, all of that really, as long as it will take the criticism that it misses the unconscious and the repression, just like we've talked about, and Ken Wilber is always talking about, and it'll start paying attention to science, which is a Western thing, and pay attention to trauma research and other Western things. And then if the Western model, or whoever does these things, me and you, because they're not, the models are just thoughts, you know, concepts, but me and you, those who engage in these things, if we'll see the limitation in the Western models, because they're not awareness-based quite often, sometimes they are, and so they're still operating on this notion of I'm a separate person and believing the conditioning that's being created by the repression and not even questioning that in some cases, and instead just questioning beliefs and things that are safer around all of that. There are some therapists that get deep into somatic work, trauma work, and repression work, and that's different. But there's the limitation there. And so, but when you bring the two together, as just now, let's talk about people, you and me, forget models in East and West. I think what this means is that when we come, no, wait, before we get to the spiritual path, or maybe on our way here or when we get here, we become educated as to these things. So that when we enter the stream of even recovery from addiction, frankly, it's the same thing, that we come with an integrated view and we know that, well, here on this left side, I've got the East, so to speak, that's pointing to what I am ultimately or what I'm not. It's offering the deepest freedom. At least it's offering that. Whether it delivers is another thing, but and then on the right is the West, or those therapies and processes that are actually in some cases more focused on what the root of suffering is, though. Because of the Western model, some of the things in the West are because they're getting into the unconscious. And some of them are not. They're still safe in processing things and not incorporating the science that's pointing them to the trauma, or they don't know how to. But there are some that are. And there's your choices. Well, here in KI, we've already brought it together. That's what I wanted to say. So you don't have to, but you can shop around. But we've already done all this because I've gone through this whole myself. I mean, I started in the Western thing, in addiction recovery and therapy for many years. And I switched over to the spiritual Eastern thing, then had the awakening experience that I've talked about, became a teacher, and shifted away from some of that processing at the ego level, which was good because that's not where I needed to be processing. Even when I was in the 12-step program, we're still processing at that conscious level. And we tap into the unconscious from time to time there, but the unconscious is the buried stuff. So that almost never came up in the 12-step program, the true buried stuff. And then of course, well, it was driving all of that. That's another story. You see, I hadn't picked up the brick yet, is what I mean. But I shifted over to the East and still didn't pick up the brick. I was over here in the West in 12-step, but I wasn't getting to the unconscious, is what I mean. I wasn't picking up the brick. So I wasn't ending suffering and still suffering. And then when I shifted over to the East, for about 3 years after the realization, there was definitely no suffering. I don't remember any. And then here came the cancer, the addiction, and the spinal stenosis. And there's the repression coming from, you know, creating that from the unconscious. Do I have scientific proof of that? No, but I have my own experience and inquiry. And science, right? We all have that. But see, people, and then I had to suffer. In some ways, even though there wasn't much emotional suffering with the cancer and the spinal stenosis at the conscious level, because I've been processing so much, at the unconscious level, there were diseases because of the repression I never got to. And so that's what I mean. There's almost this danger in not picking up the brick early. Because spirituality can be a retreat from life. And if we're really bypassing, it's a retreat from our own bodies. It's a way to tell ourselves at the conscious level that we're truly awake, but we're not until we're embodied. And for that, we have to own the parts of ourselves that we don't want to know are there, that we have never wanted to face. And if we don't go there, we can't expect the real freedom. I don't know how to say that. Why? Is that weird to say? Or is that just feels like, oh, that's obvious. I wish I could deliver it a different way, but I don't think I can. I don't think that would be completely dishonest to say. And when I look out there at other people saying anything else, I'm like, I don't know how you're going to end suffering without getting to the root of it. So if you're getting to the root of it, yeah, of course. But do you know what the root of it is? And when I look at so many people, so that's just it. Let me just paint this picture before I go. And hopefully if you come back to the episodes coming in the future here, it'll come probably sometime this summer. Frankly, I'm just taking a break here. I want you to think about this metaphor of picking up the brick on yourself because you're unconscious to the repression. So if you don't think about it, this whole subject could go away. If I'm your only lifeline to the subject on the podcast, for example, I want to give you something to contemplate instead while I'm gone, which is that, is to what degree have you picked up the brick in your own life and your suffering? Which means, are you at the repression level yet? In your processing, and before you try to convince yourself, because the mind tries to keep you safe, really do an inventory of what you're doing. Because look at what I did. I shifted from the West to the East and never picked up the brick. And frankly, I kind of used the Eastern thing where you don't pick up the brick of repression in the East. I used that, my unconsciousness did, to stay safe from what was buried. So what I'm saying to people, you have the key. If you're willing to pick up the brick, what that means is, we'll get back to that in a second. It just means, I think a lot of people come to this, maybe, not everybody though. Some come with an interest, which is a good interest to have, in awakening to what you are, into waking up to presence. Because I've written 7 books, or you know me as that. And that's a fine and great endeavor, and that's what this work is about. But, see, from the beginning you have the key. And from the beginning you have the key here, and your system will most likely do what mine did, even though you have the key now. Because I'm not assured that just because KI is in the world and that people are exposed to it, that they will get this part of it. Because once you get this framework, even if you leave KI, you're going to want to deal with, you're going to want to bring that East and West together in your life, because you're not going to want to just go meditate and avoid the unconscious, right? And you're not going to want to just process like trauma or unconscious and avoid the fact that awareness is the basis of it all, or emptiness. See, you bring them together. But KI brings them together. But because it brings them together, it does repel certain people who are interested in awakening, because they came to awakening like me to not feel the buried stuff. Right? So you have to contend with that. That's why I talk so much in these 1-minute shorts on social media or here, to just let you sit with it for a while and hear all this context and look at your life and see how suffering continues no matter how you try to regulate it. I mean, you have moments where there's clarity, but where's the end of the suffering, and why is it still coming? Because you're not getting to that level, I'm telling you. This is not a promise to just live a perfect life where you'll never have a disease again, because I could get a disease tomorrow. It's not that. It's that finally you could pick up the brick, which means that I think this is what awakening was supposed to be. My last thought here with you is this. I think that we all intended it, we wanted it to go to the deepest freedom, but our nervous systems didn't. Like, you know, in our minds, we told ourselves that. I can't speak for you. But I've done enough work for the unconscious that's how mine definitely was working. We wanted the deepest freedom, but our unconsciousness, the unconsciousness didn't. It just wanted to keep us safe and get us love and approval like it has since we were kids. And until we pick up the brick, until we made that conditioning conscious, or until we do, there really isn't going to be that freedom that we think we want. Or that love, or that connection that we're looking for, or whatever that is. We may think we have it, but there's no end to the depth of freedom. And so I can only say that because you can access states of peace and have realizations and look for the remaining suffering. Between now and the time I come back on podcast, just look for the remaining suffering in your life. If you've been listening to me, you don't have to trust me. Just trust that suffering, and you can still take the test while I'm gone and get on board with us here in the next couple of months, because we're about to create the mentorship space. We're turning the members area into a mentorship space so we can help people more in both groups and one-on-one learn this work and do it in their lives. That's one of the reasons why I'm stopping the podcast for just a little bit, so that we can create and open that. And so let these next few months be this, if you will, if you wish. And if you haven't started the work, contemplating how you might be like me or the shadow of me. And that... pretty much covers everybody, I think. If I do say so myself, that probably covers everybody. Let me explain. The reason that I brought up the anger repression, I can't defend myself scenario, and then I come to spirituality because the very anger repression that makes me not be able to defend myself makes me want to process my triggers so I don't have to feel the buried anger and so I don't have to suffer. But I'm not willing to go to the buried anger to end suffering. That's me. Or that was me. And then my shadow are the sadness and hurt repressors who have been looking in spirituality for the answers but couldn't really find them because you couldn't get to the repression level. And then also the people who feel like that they just can't, they've buried everything. And you didn't have the answers. You didn't even know that that's what the problem was, the issue. So I guess before I come back, I want to just leave everyone who hasn't started the work yet with a couple of things to sit with beyond just have you started to pick up the brick? Have you gotten into to that place within consciousness that's creating it all for safety within the body? Is that I've learned so much by mentoring and teaching in this area that I think I can speak to people a little bit more that are just coming and hearing this for the first time. Because maybe you came because you heard me talk about, I don't know, whatever reason, you're wondering what this is all about or whether you would benefit from the work. See, when you're really, really unconscious to repression, you wouldn't just walk around your life going, oh, the reason that I'm triggered today at my wife is because I bury hurt. That would not happen unless you've read a lot of books or something, or you've just done that kind of work. But generally, we just don't think that way. We talk about what's conscious, what's visible to us. So an anger repressor would talk about not anger. They would talk about triggers, reactivity, shadows, suffering, seeking, shame, anything safer than anger. And a hurt or sadness repressor would talk about anything other than hurt or sadness, because that would be buried. Or would feel anything other than what's buried and experience. See how we're not equipped well to pick up the brick when we get here, since the brick is what's missing, or under the brick is what's missing, and we don't even know to look there. So a lot of this work and me talking publicly is just to remind people that you don't know until you know. That it's only when you pick up the brick that you see what's going on here. And I can say that with confidence because I've been a teacher for 16 years, and for the first 10 or 11 years, I could never have said or even resonated with this because I hadn't picked up the brick. My repression was still there driving those diseases post-awakening. I couldn't talk about it. So there'll be people who will listen to this and say, that's just a bunch of concepts, that picking up the brick stuff. And you know what that means? It means you haven't picked up the brick yet. That's what that means. Of course it's a concept, but it's a concept that points to the fact that you haven't made the unconscious conscious, and you can't keep dismissing the concepts in the name of non-duality or whatever else, because you still have to pick up the brick if you want to end suffering. That's why the science is there, so you won't get away with that. And that's why your body is there, so you won't get away with that, actually. Because the suffering is the truth, it's the truth teller, the suffering is. It really is. And only we can know that, because some people suffer very silently, or quietly, but they know they suffer. And some people suffer loudly. But just think about like whether there's suffering there. I mean, you can define it how you want, but we don't have to get too technical here. It just means carrying something over in time, like identity, that ego reactivity, just any number of things. If you're not I don't want to set up this carrot, but if you're not living this life in which you know yourself and you trust your experience and your emotions and you don't suffer and you're not thinking about other people, you're not trying to get their approval, you're just feeling good about yourself and your life and you're present in the moment, then that's what I mean. That, did you know that was possible? That way of being? I didn't, because I hadn't picked up the brick. Embody the presence. And so some people, I think, because we're so unconscious, we come here thinking that that's not even going to be a big part of it. Like sometime down the road, I know people think this way, because I did, I'm going to embody the awareness. Because that's just how people in repression talk in awakening or spirituality. It's like, oh yeah, that process is something later. But what I want to talk to you about is the presence that's here now. But the thing is those are the same thing. See, don't be fooled by teachers who say, don't talk about the trauma, I just want to talk about the presence, which is here now, because the repression is here now too. And it's driving everything that you see coming and going in presence. That's how critically important it is to the equation. And to say that the embodiment process is something that happens down the road is what minds do to stay safe from what's buried. And that's okay. But if you don't call it out, you don't pick up the brick, why do you expect that suffering to end? See what I mean by, like, I talk about this. Maturity on a spiritual path is where you start picking up the brick and calling yourself out on how you create your own suffering. And until you start to take ownership, you'll keep suffering. I don't know another way. I don't know another way. So I say, start early. You have the key. You have KI. We've put it all together. The awareness piece is here. So here's my last topic, and I promised a mentee that I would answer this fully from my perspective. Which is, where does this pointing to, and the, including first dimension, pointing to presence and just being and allowing things, where does that fit into this? Of, with inquiry at the level where we're creating suffering. Where do those two things fit together? Well, my friend, that's the East and the West. See, that's the key. I just explained it. Well, to that mentee who's listening, I wonder if he figured it out that I was talking about. I was answering it already. That when you bring these two things together in your context or your framework, every day of your life, these two things are together. That you hear this message and you go, what Scott is saying is, it's not just about the presence. It is, but if the presence isn't embodied, then the suffering continues. Those two things are together in that. The East and the West, the awareness and the processing at the repression level. You're already here. You're already in the context when you get here. And you're already in the practice too that brings about the realization. But how it happens for each person is going to be different. And because we're working at the repression level, what's happening, I'm noticing, is that awareness is just dawning on people more. Like the sun rising, or the sun rising, really. It's not a discrete event for some people. It's because you're getting to the root of suffering, it just feels sort of, I don't want to say safer, to just be what you are. And so the nervous system, as the unconsciousness is made conscious, it's just, it's just the pointing to presence or noticing presence is just much easier. The unconscious conditioning isn't trying to run away from this in the same way. This presence. So it's just going to happen naturally. And the second question that comes with that is, why haven't I pointed to presence as a teacher? I'll answer it. That was another thing that somebody wanted me to answer here in this last episode. They know the answer already, the person who asked me this. They just want me to talk about it publicly. This is not a question. This is a prod. Trust me. I know it is. And that's okay. The reason I haven't been pointing to presence is because if I do that, I'm going to keep you at the level that keeps you safe and suffering. If I just point to present moment awareness, and I know it, and I can tell you why. Because if you go to the YouTube, my YouTube channel, and you watch my YouTube video called KI Dimensional Map, you'll see it. You'll see that in first and second dimension, we don't get to repression. So first and second dimension was created in part, and maybe in large part, by anger repressors who came before all of us and who designed these practices and teachings to stay safe from their buried anger, and some hurt and sadness repressors who designed these practices that didn't want to get to the unconscious to begin with. And we are in the cushion of the bypass. Whether you've picked up that brick is another question. I mean, KI is the way out of that bypass, but I think the reason that I want to bring this up today is because I remember what it was like to seek awakening. And I honor and respect that. Because it actually just sort of took over my life for a couple of years, actually, before the shift happened. So I appreciate people. And when you're talking to people who are really seeking awakening, you can't really talk to them about, it's hard, not everybody. It's hard to talk to them about what's driving all of that, including how the emotional repression is driving the seeking towards awakening. Because why would you go looking in the future for what you are now? Unless there's something you didn't want to feel here now. But it's hard for them to hear that. So instead, they want to go, oh, well, can you talk about awareness? Can you point to awareness? Because they don't know that that's safer to their nervous system. So no, I'm not going to point to awareness and lull you into a bypass like I was lulled into by teachers who didn't speak harshly and directly to me. Or not harshly, but directly. You know, not harshly. Someone said that. I talk harshly sometimes. No, I think that when we're unconscious around repression, if somebody doesn't speak about this directly, we just keep missing it. I don't think I have any interest, actually, in getting you to turn that seeking energy towards learning tools that get to the root of suffering to end suffering. I don't think I have any energy around that. But you might. If you don't want to suffer anymore. You might wonder why you seek it so much if you're hearing me. And you know that the seeking, especially if you've done our test or any of our work, and you know the seeking for awakening in the future is a distraction from the buried emotions now, which is exactly what you want at the unconscious level, you might be wondering why you still do it. The seeking just keeps us safe. Because what we are is what's already here and awake, just like the teachings and traditions have always said. They're right about that. But that doesn't mean the body is in alignment with that. So even for those of you who are rushing to awakening or who are going to go to those teachers who point to presence and away from this work, remember that, because it could save you some time and keep you from prolonging suffering if you hear that the stuff that's coming up to your awareness when you sit with those teachers is all safer than what's buried, unless those teachings and practices take you to picking up the brick and getting to that conditioning. And that's what we're doing here. And it's safer just to go over there. That's what I would say. It's just safer to go there. So if that's what you want, now people will say, that's not what I want. I want to be free. I want to stay here and get to the root. Yeah. But don't you want the awareness recognition? See, that's not just your mind. That's your nervous system. For those of you who say, yeah, I want that. What you really want is to know what you are. You want to know that you are this now. You want to recognize it right now. On some level, that's why you're here. That's why you go to these teachings or practices, right? And you know that it's here right now. It's what you are. You're awake now, or you are this here. But the interesting thing, if you take a look, is why do you seek it in the future? Just if you really get this, you might come and do this work, actually. You do that because that's a distraction from what you've buried. And what you've buried is buried, so you don't know that that's running that. If you knew that that was running that, if you were conscious, then it wouldn't be happening. If you were actually conscious of it, you're not conscious to it. That's how the seeking happens. The seeking is great because it can finally turn us towards the subject, at least, if not in the right direction, because the future's not it, but turn us towards the subject that we don't know what we are, and that's why we're suffering. And that's where the East can learn so much. Excuse me, the West can learn so much from the East, because we get to that question of what you are. And that's also the question of how you heal. And here, healing is in the spiritual sense of making things that are unconscious conscious, because that happens in awareness. This is our own bodies that we're talking about. But like when you really, really put those things together, and this is the hard thing. I want you to sit with this before I leave. It's been a longer podcast than I thought it would be. This is good because I want you guys to sit with a few things, because I know some of you have been listening. I hope you're following along here. See, if you know that I'm talking about the root of suffering here, and that the root of suffering drives you away from that, then that's half the battle. If you know that I'm pointing to what's driving your suffering here, and that your nervous system naturally wants to go away from that, that's how you'll begin to put them together, the East and West. Is that I think a lot of people come to this work either because they've exhausted other resources where they were trying to stay safe and get love and approval, and it didn't work, and the suffering continued, or they got a disease or something, or they just hear something and they're just drawn to it for some reason. Some experience happened to them and they know that they're bypassing and but I do think that it can be helpful just to hear something like this, that you really don't want to put these two things together. That's what I want to say. You don't want to do that. Your system doesn't want that. See what I mean? Like, okay, last point. You're always going to go to what's safe. So that's why we gravitate to duality. That's why we go either, I think a lot of us go to either East or West, because we're seeking safety. It's a duality. Because we can either go to the East and just hang out in awareness and avoid the buried stuff. That's safe. Or we go to the West and we process the stuff that's coming up, but we don't recognize that we're the awareness. So the ego kind of stays intact as we process there. And we're safe on both sides. And that's the bypass, is not bringing those things together. But here we bring them together. You don't want that. That's why you landed on one of those two sides, if you did. That's why I did. I went from the West to the East. But when you, it's just a metaphor, East-West. It just means awareness, East. The unconscious made conscious, West. There's your freedom. See? That's KI. So if you're still suffering between now and the time that I do the next episode, either go to repressiontest.com to take our test, or go to killaby.com and scroll to the bottom of the page and take our test. That will show you the contraction in your body that's driving suffering. So one thing about that test real quick, the emotions that come up and the thoughts, that's not the repression. So the stuff that doesn't come up, that's just felt as contraction in your body, in the stomach, the heart, chronic pain, whatever, that's where you hold the repression. So when you take that test and you look at your dad and mom and you say, I'm not angry. If anger comes up, anger is not repressed. Anger then is repressed. Excuse me. If anger comes up, you don't have that repression. if you go over to sadness and you say, I can show sadness, and it comes up, then it's not repressed. Repression is when you look at someone, you know, like that, and you say, I'm not angry, and no actual anger comes up because it's repressed. What you might feel is like tightness, again, in the stomach, contraction, constriction, or dissociation. Something other than anger, your system is keeping you safe. And that's how suffering continues, by not seeing that that's what's happening. So that test is there to show you the missing experience, see? So what arises in that test is not it. If you notice in the test, I'm pointing you to the contraction, what's not arising, and all of KI focuses there. Because when you pick up that brick and make the unconscious conscious, that's when the suffering that does arise goes away. Because the repression creates the suffering. The buried stuff creates the visible stuff. What you hold back as true forces you to identify with what's false. I'll see you guys in either a few weeks or months.